excited. Son has been born. Maybe he's like 6 months now, baby. He's getting big and he's so precious. His name is Eiko Katori. My name is Nikki Strong and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English on The Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple grammar and a limited vocabulary. Today on the show, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close our show with an American story. But first, here's Susan Shand.
Taiwan opened a government office this month to help Hong Kong citizens ask for legal residency on the island. Hong Kong's residents have protested over the past year against Chinese rule in the territory. Chinese lawmakers recently approved a security law for the former British colony. Taiwan may offer a democratic system of government and a shelter for those fearing any Chinese oppression. But it is hard to say if Hong Kongers are interested in moving to Taiwan. People who study interactions between the two sides say they do not expect large numbers of people will go. China took control of Hong Kong from the British in 1997. Taiwan is self-ruled, although the mainland claims that it is part of China. Most Hong Kongers who consider emigrating look not to Taiwan, but Western countries, where they can earn more money. Some residents also worry that there will be conflict in the future between Taiwan and China. Taiwan to them is like Hong Kong in the future, said Shane Lee, a retired political science professor from Changchun Christian University in Taiwan. They're very leery about the future of Taiwan, if maybe there was a war or something. Taiwan will receive some interest among the fearful in Hong Kong because the island is so close. It also has a lower cost of living and a Chinese culture similar to Hong Kong's. Yi Ming Tan moved from Taiwan to Hong Kong 10 years ago. He now operates an executive coaching service on the island. He says business people can do well in Taiwan because of lower operating costs, but it is important to have the right connections to help understand business rules. Taiwan's Investment Commission lists 1,760 investment projects from Hong Kong since it began keeping records in 1962. They are worth about $7.9 billion. Wealthier people fleeing Hong Kong are more likely to go to Western countries than to Taiwan, notes Liu Lijun, a professor at Fo Guang University in Taiwan. Those who left in 1997 went to Australia, Canada, or other Western countries. Costs of living are often higher in the West, but people generally earn more money. Laborers from Hong Kong would get lower pay in Taiwan compared to Hong Kong. Also, the newcomers would mostly speak only Hong Kong's Cantonese and not Mandarin, the official Mandarin Chinese, experts warn. The only language they can communicate with people is Cantonese, Liu said. If the overseas workers want to compete for a job, these people will be heavily discriminated. Hong Kong retirees would consider Taiwan for its cost of living, but people who need money will look to other countries, adds Alex Chang. He is an associate professor of international politics at National Chungchi University in Taipei. I think they'll go to some place where they can make more money, Chang said. Australia, Britain, and the United States have also sought ways to accept Hong Kong citizens as refugees because of Hong Kong's new security law. China approved the law on June 30th to stop the protests that sometimes shook Hong Kong over the past year. The law criminalizes secession, subversion, terrorism, and aiding foreign forces. It is seen by many as a direct threat to Hong Kong's democracy. Taiwan's service office offers Hong Kong residents humanitarian assistance, help finding work, or help setting up a business. Last year, pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong asked Taiwanese legislators to consider an asylum law. Worried about its own security, Taiwan still examines requests for asylum cases one by one. Slightly more than 5,000 people from Hong Kong emigrated to Taiwan last year, reported Taiwan's government-supported Central News Agency. That is 40% more than in 2018. I'm Susan Shand.
Two of Walt Disney World's four theme parks in Florida are reopening Saturday. The other two are preparing to reopen 4 days from now. Return visitors will find new rules in place and probably notice some major changes at the parks near the city of Orlando. Missing will be the usual nightly fireworks show above what Disney officials call the most magical place on Earth. Officials also have suspended Disney World's beloved parades. In fact, officials have taken steps to avoid all events that lead people to crowd together closely. The company hopes the changes are enough to prevent the spread of COVID-19 among Disney World visitors and employees. The new rules require that people get temperature checks before entering the park and use face covers while on site. Visitors also will not be seeing any live performances for a while. Disney World's performers are in a dispute with the company about their demands for a virus testing program. Unlike other park workers, singers and dancers cannot wear face masks or socially distance while on the job. Florida is currently experiencing one of the worst outbreaks of COVID-19 in the United States. Experts have described the state as the latest epicenter of the coronavirus spread. Also this week, Walt Disney World welcomed the arrival of 22 National Basketball Association teams. The professional sports organization suspended the basketball season in March because of COVID-19. Now it is preparing to return to play, holding the remainder of the season's games at Disney World's huge sports complex. The first game is set for July 30th. NBA officials say the championship will be decided by October 13th. "It's great to be back after 4 months," said Orlando Magic player Nikola Vucevic. Not all players were quite as happy, however. LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers expressed displeasure about being separated from his family. He wrote on Twitter about missing his wife and 3 children in California. "Just left the crib to head to the bubble. Hated to leave the James gang," he posted. And one NBA player expressed his opinion on the restart without even having to say a word. Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers joined his team on the flight to Orlando wearing a full hazmat suit. Embiid is known for being a joker and got some laughs for his effort.
This week, we received a question from Aguinaldo, a teacher in Brazil. He asks, "I've seen recently that we shouldn't call a teacher teacher. We should call him or her by their name. Is that true? Why? Is it the same for professors?" Aguinaldo, Brazil. Dear Aguinaldo, this is a great question. I have taught in many countries where the common practice is for students to call me teacher. It always sounded a little strange to me. Most Americans do not use teacher to address a teacher in English. Sometimes Americans do use titles this way, however. For example, they might address a medical doctor as simply doctor, a religious leader as reverend, or a judge as your honor. So, how should students address their teacher? Most American teachers of children are addressed using the honorifics Miss, Ms., Mrs., or Mr., with their family or last name. The last 3 are shortened in writing to MS, MRS, and MR. The honorific Miss does not have a shortened version. At the beginning of a school term, a teacher should tell students how to address her or him. Suppose the teacher's name is Elissa Brown. She most likely will tell her students to call her Ms. Brown. For men, Mr. is used. The honorifics Miss and Mrs. identify if a woman is unmarried or married. These terms are less common in the modern world as they provide unnecessary personal information. There is no English honorific that communicates if a man is married or single. You also asked about professors. Generally, they also choose how they want to be addressed. It is not unusual for a professor to be addressed as professor, however, especially in the learning setting. Here is an example sentence. Professor, what is the difference between Mr. and Ms.? Most university professors in America hold doctoral degrees, and many of them use the title of doctor. The second part of your question was about why teacher is not a good name to call your teacher. In many cultures, using the word teacher shows great respect. But for many American teachers, including me, teacher is an impersonal term. The good news is teachers of English as a second language expect cultural differences between themselves and their students. We understand our students are trying to show respect when they address us. That's Ask a Teacher for this week. What questions do you have about English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story today is called Atenaeus. It was written by Kate Chopin. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Atenaeus went away one morning to visit her parents, 10 miles back on the Bon Dieu River in Louisiana. She did not return in the evening, and Cazot, her husband, was worried. Cazot expressed his worries to his servant, Félicité, who served him dinner. He ate alone by the light of a coal oil lamp. Félicité stood nearby like a restless shadow. "Only married 2 months and she has her head turned already to leave? It is not right," she said. Cazot shrugged his shoulders. Félicité's opinion of his wife's behavior after 2 months of marriage did not matter to him. He was used to being alone and did not mind a night or two of it. Cazot stood up and walked outside. The night was beginning to deepen and gather black around the groups of trees in the yard. Far away, he could hear the sound of someone playing an accordion. Nearby, a baby was crying. Cazot's horse was waiting, saddled. He still had much farm work to do before bedtime. He did not have time to think about Atenaeus, but he felt her absence like a deep pain. Before he slept that night, Cazot was visited by an image of Atenaeus' pale young face, with its soft lips and sensual eyes. The marriage had been a mistake. He had only to look into her eyes to feel that, to sense her growing dislike of him. But the marriage could not be undone, and he was ready to make the best of it, and expected the same effort from her. These sad thoughts kept Cazot awake far into the night. The moon was shining, and its pale light reached into the room. It was still outside, with no sound except the distant notes of the accordion. Atenaeus did not return the next day, although her husband sent a message to do so through her brother, Monteclin. On the third day, Cazot prepared his horse and went himself in search of her. Atenaeus' parents, the Michets, lived in a large home owned by a trader who lived in town. The house was far too big for their use. Upstairs, the rooms were so large and empty that they were used for parties. A dance at the Michet home and a plate of Madame Michet's gumbo were pleasures not to be missed. Madame Michet was sitting on the porch outside the house. She stood up to greet Cazot. She was short and fat, with a cheery face, but she was clearly tense as Cazot arrived. Monteclin was there, too. But he was not uneasy. He made no effort to hide his dislike of Cazot. "Dirty pig," he said under his breath as Cazot climbed the stairs to the porch. Monteclin disliked Cazot for refusing to lend him money long ago.
Now that this man was his sister's husband, he disliked him even more. Michel and his oldest son were away. They both respected Cazot and talked highly of him. Cazot shook hands with Madame Michel, who offered him a chair. Athenaïs had shut herself in her room. "You know, nothing would do last night," Madame Michel said. "Athenaïs just had to stay for a little dance. The boys would not let their sister leave." Cazot shrugged his shoulders to show he knew nothing about last night. "Didn't Monteclin tell you we were going to keep Athenaïs?" she asked. But Monteclin had told him nothing. "And how about the night before?" asked Cazot. "And last night? Do you have dances every night?" Madame Michel laughed and told her son to go tell Athenaïs her husband had arrived. Monteclin did not move. "You know as well as I do that it is no use to tell Athenaïs anything," said Monteclin. "You and Pa have been talking to her since Monday. When Athenaïs said she was not returning to Cazot, she meant it." Two fiery red spots rose to Cazot's cheeks. What Monteclin said was true. Upon arriving home, Athenaïs had announced she was there to stay. It was difficult for her to understand why she had married. Girls were just expected to get married. And she did like Cazot. Monteclin had asked Athenaïs to explain herself. He had asked her if Cazot abused her or if he drank too much. "No," Athenaïs had said. "It is just being married that I hate. I do not like being Mrs. Cazot. I want to be Athenaïs Michel again. I do not like living with a man, all his clothing everywhere, and his ugly bare feet." At the time, Monteclin had been sorry his sister had no serious evidence to use against Cazot. And now there was Cazot himself looking like he wanted to hit Monteclin. Cazot stood up and went inside the house to his wife's room. "Athenaïs, get ready," he said quietly. "It is late, and we do not have time to lose." Athenaïs was not prepared for his calm request. She felt a sense of hopelessness about continuing to rebel against the idea of marriage. She gathered her hat and gloves. Then she walked downstairs past her brother and mother, got on her horse, and rode away. Cazot followed behind her. It was late when they reached home. Cazot once more ate dinner alone. Athenaïs sat in her room crying. Athenaïs's parents had hoped that marriage would bring a sense of responsibility so deeply lacking in her character. No one could understand why she so hated her role as wife. Cazot had never spoken angrily to her, or called her names, or failed to give her everything she wanted. His main offense seemed to be that he loved her, and Athenaïs was not a woman to be loved against her will. At breakfast, Athenaïs complained to her husband. "Why did you have to marry me when there were so many other girls to choose from?" she asked. "And
It is strange that if you hate my brother so much, why would you marry his sister?
I do not know what any of them have to do with it, Kazo said. I married you because I loved you. I guess I was fooled to think I could make you happy. I do not know what else to do but make the best of a bad deal and shake hands over it.
It now seemed to Atenaiz that her brother was the only friend left to her in the world. Her parents had turned from her, and her friends laughed at her. But Monteclin had an idea for securing his sister's freedom. After some thought, Atenaiz agreed to his plan. The next morning, Kazo woke up to find his wife was gone. She had packed her belongings and left in the night. Kazo felt a terrible sense of loss. It was not new. He had felt it for weeks. He realized he had missed his chance for happiness. He could not think of loving any other woman, and could not imagine Atenaiz ever caring for him. He wrote her a letter stating that he did not want her back unless she returned of her own free will. Atenaiz had escaped to the big city of New Orleans. She was staying at a private hotel that Monteclin had chosen and paid to rent for a month. A woman named Sylvie owned the hotel and took good care of Atenaiz. Atenaiz soon became friends with Mr. Gouvernail, who was also staying at the hotel. This friendship helped her feel less lonely about missing her family. But Mr. Gouvernail soon started to fall in love with Atenaiz. He knew she was uninformed, unsatisfied, and strong-willed, but he also suspected that she loved her husband, although she did not know it. Bitter as this belief was, he accepted it. Atenaiz's last week in the city was coming to an end. She had not found a job and was too homesick to stay any longer. Also, she had not been feeling well. She complained in detail about her sickness to Sylvie. Sylvie was very wise, and Atenaiz was very stupid. Sylvie very calmly explained to Atenaiz that she was feeling sick because she was pregnant. Atenaiz sat very still for a long time thinking about this new information. Her whole being was overcome with a wave of happiness. Then she stood up, ready to take action. She had to tell her mother, and Kazo. As she thought of him, a whole new sense of life swept over her. She could not wait to return to him. The next day, Atenaiz spent traveling home. When she arrived at Kazo's, he lifted her out of the horse carriage, and they held each other tight. The country night was warm and still, except for a baby crying in the distance. "Listen, Kazo," said Atenaiz, "how Juliet's baby is crying. Poor darling. I wonder what is the matter with it."
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.